This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of August the 10th, 2020, brought to you by the law firm Krieg DeVault. I'm Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. During financial crises like the one we're in right now, we often focus on professionals who have lost their jobs, but we shouldn't forget that this is also a very treacherous time for young people headed into college, who are trying to finish up, or who have recently graduated. Among the 10,000 or so bits of conventional wisdom that the pandemic has turned sideways is the whole idea that going to college after high school is a smart investment in your future. Obviously, the pandemic has given everyone pause from a personal health perspective, but given all the limitations that are being imposed on the college experience this fall, a lot of families are asking themselves and their financial planners, is this really worth it? Maybe this isn't the best year to start your college career on campus or to continue your career for the money that you'll end up paying. IBJ personal finance columnist Pete Dunn, aka Pete the Planner, is hearing this question from his clients. I asked Pete how these students and their families can put themselves in the best position over the course of this year to attempt a relaunch next fall. Or, you know, who knows, maybe 6 months or a year after that. Here's our conversation. Joining me again in the IBJ Podcast Virtual Studio is Pete Dunn. How are you doing, sir?
I'm hanging in there. Glad to be back with you.
We were talking beforehand about your exercise regimen, and you did a 40-mile bike ride yesterday. It was, what was it, like 78 degrees?
I mean, no. I did it at like 6:40 in the morning. So oh, wow. it was like 55 degrees or something like that. So, you know, I didn't sweat too much. I'm a ginger, so you got to be sensitive to the sun.
I have to say I'm loving the temperatures, but when it gets this cool, it starts to remind me of September's past and how anxious I would get whenever we started a school year. And of course, the level of real anxiety right now for young people headed to college is totally off the charts, including a couple of my nephews, with so many questions about being able to contain the coronavirus on campus. The anxiety is pretty significant for young people who have decided to take the year off and maybe hopefully sidestep the stress and chaos of a pandemic year. So I want to concentrate on two groups, people who are of college age, who may or may not be going to an in-person university, and then recent graduates in their early and mid-20s who have been struggling to become financially independent and build wealth and even make some of those early contributions towards retirement. So let's start with the college kids and tell me about what you're hearing from clients who have kids headed into college.
Well, obviously there's the health concerns, but you know, beyond indulging them in those thoughts, I don't really engage on that. It's not my expertise. And the next question out of their mouth, Mason, is usually, is it worth it, right? And not the risk, but the dollars going into the type of education they'll receive. And if people are asking if a Harvard education is worth the cost when it's an online school, that opens up literally every other higher ed institution for the is it worth it question. I think what you're starting to see already are some really smart moves by higher ed. Just recently this week, or last week, I should say, Hanover College and Ivy Tech announced a credit transfer partnership. And so you're going to see some of these liberal arts schools, some of these higher dollar private schools saying, okay, we're going to take in and transfer credits from a community college because that will help us appeal to people who are trying to be financially sensible during this time. I think it's a brilliant move for Hanover. Now, I have to admit, I'm a biased person because I went to Hanover. but that is a very smart thing that I think you're going to see some schools do here in the next couple months.
Well, great. So you could potentially shave tens of thousands of dollars off of the first year or two of college.
Absolutely. And I think it's for each household to discuss that. I'm never going to give a blanket recommendation like everyone needs to go to community college this year and then transfer their credits in because it's just not right for everyone based on their career aspirations and the field of study they're in. I do think, however, that a student that maybe get a general studies degree or doesn't exactly know what they want to do yet, of course, community college makes a lot of sense this year. I was never a gap year makes sense. Once you find yourself free, I'm not that guy. But you know what? I think this is the time when a lot of silly rules that people like me make need to be broken. And so I think a gap year can make sense. I think a gap year off campus and going to a community college or online education in an inexpensive way makes sense. I know my higher ed partners and clients don't necessarily like hearing that, but you asked for what I think, and that's what I think.
My first year of college was an embarrassment. I mean, I was embarrassed to go home. I couldn't believe that my parents paid for what I had just done. And I took a gap year, and it actually did help quite a bit.
Yeah, look, my first semester of college, I believe I obtained a 2.3% or 2.3 grade point average. I called it a percent. That's how bad I was. It's not a percentage, everybody. Yeah. So look, why take an already difficult circumstance, which is the first semester of your college career, and make it harder with all of these circumstances? Oh, and then of course, Mason, let's not forget, because I set it aside at the beginning, but it is the topper. It is always the topper, the health risk associated with it.
Now, one assumes that, okay, if you're taking classes online for your first year, you're probably staying with mom and dad. What should those families be doing to improve their financial situation headed into, you know, hopefully a year when you can go back to college? Is there some way that they can be better situated for when they eventually end up on campus?
Yes. And I think, you know, you talk about in dark times, where does opportunity exist? I think people in this situation have a giant opportunity. And we're going to get to the college grads in a second who they're cohabitating with their parents. But in this situation, you have to understand there's not going to be much of a social life. I mean, the whole social scene is dead. Even as an old guy sitting here saying this, it's just true that your bars are closed. You can't really do a whole lot of stuff. So that's one thing. You're trying to get this 18, 19 year old to understand that their living expenses cannot exceed their source of money. And if you're living off of student loans and you're living at home, going out and spending that money doesn't make a lot of sense. The fact that you're cutting room and board expenses makes a tremendous amount of sense. And that's what's great. I think the key to any parent getting a student to finally leave the house permanently, financially, the key to all of this is to make sure that whatever income source is available, a significant portion of it is being used to either pay off debt or save money. Because if you don't do that, that person will never be able to afford rent. And I'm going to make up a number here. People can argue about it later in the comments. But so let's say it's $750 a month for rent. And there is a source of income, loans, or even a working person who's got a lower wage job than they want. If $750 when they're living at home isn't going towards something like getting out of debt or saving money, that child will never leave home, because that $750 reflects and represents the flexibility to afford rent and to afford living on their own. And I think that is the focus. That should be the focus for parents who are having their college-age kids live with them, or parents who are now housing their recent college grads.
One more thing that you mentioned in a previous conversation was that some families are trying to negotiate with colleges on tuition and room and board. How do you negotiate with a college?
Well, look, I'm not exactly a former FBI negotiator that's written like a best-selling book or anything, but I've read them. I would think the goal here is to talk to the bursar's office, not necessarily talk to the admissions office, unless it's maybe you're a first year student. I'm seeing varied reports on this, right? I always think it's worth asking, because you never know. And you're not trying to make up a sob story or to tell a lie or anything like that. I feel like that's the ugly part of negotiating. But I think, Mason, you can call up and say, look, my student will not be living on campus. We've chosen to commute. We have seen already, and I've read articles about this, that even if you're commuting, some schools are not lowering room and board costs if you choose to commute for safety reasons, which I think is a little on the nose. I wouldn't necessarily do, but here's the thing. These colleges and universities are in a pretty big bind. You're already seeing a lot of layoffs in higher ed. So you've got fewer kids on campus because of this. You've got layoffs because of this. It's not a stretch to say the quality of the education will be affected by that. And Mason, I also don't think it's inappropriate to make that statement. It is understandable. The colleges and universities are not the bad guys in this. This is not adversarial. That's not what's up right now. But it is about families fighting for the financial future of their students.
Okay, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The IBJ podcast is brought to you by Creek DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Creek DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Creek DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.creekdevault.com.
All right, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ podcast. I'm talking with Pete Dunn, aka Pete the Planner, about college students and recent graduates whose lives have been interrupted by the pandemic.
Now, let's look at the recent graduates. Let's say you have a young person at home. He or she is now looking for work in their field where they have their degree. Obviously, the job market is very tough. First up, is it okay to live at home while you're looking for a job?
In this environment, 100% yes. In fact, creating a second household with no income source is violently irresponsible.
Should they try to get some kind of job while they're looking for a better job in their career field? Or should they, you know, wake up at 10 a.m. every morning, go on Indeed.com or Monster.com, if that still exists, and look for a job for a while and then take a walk?
That is the $45,000 question. And the reason is because the clock is ticking. It's already August. And so if you say, well, what's at risk if a person keeps looking for their dream job? Like how long can they do that? Well, there's a couple ways to look at it. Number one, at the end of the year of the calendar year here in 2020, you'll have a new flock of mid-semester graduates or mid-year graduates, I should say, that then flood the job market for the same jobs. And then the nightmare scenario, which certainly affected people 2008 and 2009, Mason, is you make it all the way back to April and May, when you've got a whole new flock of graduates going to find a job. So there's a couple ways to look at this. Number one, if you're a college grad right now, you graduated in May, trying to figure out where you can get a job because your field's not hiring, your student loan payments, the grace period ends in January. You're going to have to start paying back your student loans. And if you don't, I mean, you can go into deferment and all these other things. And by the way, that is also why people tend to go back to grad school at that time of year, because they can't find a way to pay their student loans. So if they go back to grad school, then they can put off the obligation to pay those student loans until they're out of school, which is a bad idea.
But then they're getting more student loans.
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, what's weird is in 2008, 2009, one of the strange bad trends was because for-profit colleges were so popular then that there was, I don't want to say inducement because that sounds too much like a legal term. They were suggestions from admissions offices of for-profit colleges of students that just enroll for classes just so they could get a pool of capital, student loans, to live off of with no intention of actually getting a degree. I don't think that's going to happen this time around, but it was wildly popular in 2009, the spring of 2009. I think there's nothing wrong living with home with mom and dad. But there has to be a very adult conversation about, we're going to handle these expenses, you handle these expenses, and our goal is to launch you because you've set enough income aside on a regular basis to prove you can live on your own.
Right. So you need to make an adult budget. You need to, of the money that you might be getting, if you're able to find some kind of part-time or menial job, do you want to lower your debt first? Do you want to save money first? Do you want to focus on accumulating assets? Is it too early to focus on saving for retirement?
I feel like these questions were planned for me. I love these questions. All right, so here's the thing. First off, when you graduate from college, your number one priority, I'm talking about like the day after you graduate, you probably should know this before you graduate, is to know what your monthly student loan payment obligation is in order to pay back your loans within 10 years. Okay, so that you got to know that number. Then you theoretically or mentally set that number aside, and then everything else is budgeted net that number, right? You know, if your income is $2,000 a month and your student loan obligations $300 a month, then you are now budgeting off of $1,700 a month. That's just the way it has to be. Now, ideally, you're making that payment immediately. Like you're not taking on the grace period, because if you take on the grace period, then all of the interest will recapitalize into the loan at the end of the year, making your loans higher. So you need to be aggressive now. Completely unrealistic right now, Mason. That is a completely unrealistic piece of advice right now. Therefore, your number one priority, if you are not in a field you want to be in and you are jobless right now, your number one priority is to be ready to take on your student loan debt in January. That's all I care about. That's all I care about. Beyond that, ideally, we want people to put 12 to 15% of their annual income towards retirement starting the first year they're in the workforce. If you do that, you virtually guarantee, yes, I just used the G word talking about investments, so that's a bad idea, but you virtually ensure that you'll have a successful retirement. That too is unrealistic right now. Okay, so this is a long-winded way to say, number one is be ready to pay student loans. Number two, build an emergency fund. I think that takes precedence over retirement. I can't believe I'm saying this. And number three is to keep a modest lifestyle. Just because your mom and dad are handling your you know, living expenses doesn't mean you can blow $200 a week on dining out, or you know, you spend $100 a day on Amazon buying the latest, greatest Tide Pods. I don't know what people buy on Amazon. I'm just trying to seem relevant.
I wanted to talk about millennials and the Gen Zers, you know, the folks who are, you know, around mid-20s. Of course, they're in a super tough position because they're missing a lot of opportunities to begin becoming financially independent and putting away those critical early investments in retirement. You know, they came into the workforce at a time of stagnant wages and a rising cost of living. What should their financial priorities be right now? Still paying off the school debt? And once they do that, what's next?
That should ideally be their job, their focus, on top of trying to have an emergency fund. I think that, as we've talked about on your show here before, the difference in America right now are the people who entered this period of time with stability and the people who entered it without stability. So stability really is the key. And the easiest way to think about stability is 3 months' expenses set aside. And I know when I say that, it sounds out of touch. Like, oh, hey, snap your fingers and now have 3 months' expenses. But what it really means, Mason, is that if you get a stimulus payment, if you have unexpected money coming to you, your number one priority is stability. Therefore, set it aside. It's not, in my opinion, your obligation to stimulate the economy by buying something if you don't have stability, because it will whipsaw on you and you will find yourself in trouble. You know, there was a survey or a research project, whatever, that came out in the last week or so with Edward Jones and an organization called AgeWave that studies financial habits. And it said that millennials and Gen Z are twice as concerned about how this pandemic is going to affect their finances as boomers are, which is understandable, right? Because baby boomers have had the chance to build home equity, which is, you know, a great security blanket. They've got investments they could theoretically just withdraw or borrow from. And I would also note here that from a mental health standpoint, I think younger generations are more willing to admit their vulnerabilities, to talk about them, and to acknowledge their feelings, which is a very good and healthy thing. So just the idea that millennials and Gen Z acknowledge their vulnerability, it's the old 12-step thing. I mean, admitting that there's a problem ahead of you, I think is really important, because honestly, you know, we deal with people of every income level. I see a lot of boomers who have yet to admit their financial vulnerability, and that is their biggest weakness.
I remember when I was getting out of grad school, I immediately was showered with offers to refinance my student loans. Is that the right way to go, or under what circumstances should I look at refinancing?
Really depends on the type of student loans you have. Federally subsidized student loans are pretty cheap, frankly. I mean, the interest rates are pretty low. If you get into some private student loans because you took on a ton of student loan debt, then you are talking about refinancing things that, you know, interest rates, high single digits into two digits, you know, 10, 11%. That can make some sense to refinance. It also depends on the field of study or the career field you're going into. For instance, if you're going into public service, you may actually get yourself on track for public service student loan forgiveness, which is a program that catches a lot of heat because a lot of people aren't able to take advantage of it. And not to shoot the messenger here, however, a lot of people aren't able to take advantage of it, Mason, because they do it wrong. I mean, no one likes to hear that the consumer's actually doing it wrong. They love to blame the government here, but the consumer's doing it wrong. So if you are going to be in public service and you think you can qualify for that program, do not refinance your student loans. That would be a giant mistake. Also, refinance your student loans affects the forgivability of those loans in the event of your early demise. That's a really political way to say when you're dead, your family's going to have to pay your bills if you refinance your student loans, depending on how you refinance them. So that's something worth considering too. I think the biggest issue with refinancing is asking yourself, what are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to have the lowest interest rate, thus the lowest payment? Are you trying to have the lowest interest rate so you pay the least amount of interest over time? Or are you trying to pay off the loan faster? Very important questions. Just, hey, should I refi? Means nothing to me because I need to know truly what is your aim.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I discovered after I did take the bait and refi was that I was back on the 10-year cycle. And even though I was paying a lower monthly rate, I think I probably did end up paying more money than I would have.
It's interesting. And that's a very common thing. I remember early in my career, refinancing a mortgage and just stacking the years right back up, you know? And even if we, as we've personally in the Dunn household here, looked at refinance options because of low interest rates, you know, we were in a 15-year mortgage, are in a 15-year mortgage. To refinance, I would want to go to a 10. And the 10-year rates aren't that great because I want to shave off enough time. So why to refinance is super important that a lot of people, students or otherwise, tend to ignore. I don't know why. I think it's because they get so excited because they hear on the news, oh, record low rates. And they think that itself is reason enough to refinance.
My last question, I think we actually kind of addressed this. Is this the right time to go to grad school? Or is that kind of a sucker bet right now?
I do want to preface this by saying this is a financial opinion from financial columnist Pete the Planner and not education specialist or career specialist Pete the Planner. There's no way I would go to grad school right now. Yes, it feels like, oh, it's a safe place to park and to make yourself more qualified for jobs when you come out. I think it could potentially, this is my opinion, price you out of the job market. You've got this advanced degree. You're going to require more money because now you have more student loans. And so when you go to the workforce, look, we've got record low unemployment. Yes, you want to be as attractive as possible from an employment standpoint to find employment. But Mason, sometimes that works against you. From my experience of what I've seen financially, I know a lot of people that have been to grad school and we've seen a lot of people, households over the years, we're tens of thousands of dollars deeper into student loan debt and the income to try to justify that decision just never arrives.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We'll talk to you in about a month.
All right. I'll see you.
My thanks again to Pete Dunn. Before you get on with the rest of your week, I want to draw your attention to a couple of stories in the latest edition of IBJ. Sam Quinn explores how the pandemic has illuminated and magnified the challenges facing people experiencing homelessness in Indianapolis's core. Certainly, homelessness has become a much more visible problem downtown, as shelters have been forced to operate at reduced capacities, and the city-operated Addiction Center for Homeless Residents closed for months during the pandemic. Sam digs into the city's short-term and long-term strategies for sheltering and providing services for the homeless. Also in this week's issue, Susan Orr explains how a pandemic-related plunge in ridership and expected declines in tax revenue have led Indigo to examine all of its operations for potential cost cuts. Federal COVID relief dollars are helping keep the transit agency running in the short term, but it expects to see big revenue shortfalls after 2022. You can read these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at ibj.com. I will say it is a lot easier to get access to all of IBJ's award-winning business content if you have a subscription. It works out to about $2 per week, which is pretty good for the amount of information that can help you make important decisions in the next few months. Just go to ibj.com and click on the subscribe button. Thanks again for making the time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.